Hello there, and welcome to episode number 135 of Blue Jays World Update. I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and let's get you up to date. Well, don't we have some moves to talk about? Yeah. So, the Blue Jays have made their first two signings of the offseason. And they came on back-to-back days. And my goodness, has there been quite the reaction to these first two notable moves of the winter? And I'm going to address the elephant in the room right now. Get it out of the way first. Yeah. Signing Kevin Kiermaier and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, or IKF, as it's much easier to say. Pretty significant pivot from being a bridesmaid to Shohei Ohtani to being considerably, if not heavily, interested in starting pitcher Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Being largely considered a front-runner, or at least one of the finalists, in the Cody Bellinger sweepstakes, to landing two position players that are very reliable defensively, but offensively, they're not going to move the needle all that much for you next season. And because of that, understandably, much of the fan base, much of the baseball community surrounding this Blue Jays team is a little up in arms. And that's totally fair. Right? We all kind of predicted that no matter what the Jays did after, you know, the Ohtani, the Soto, the Yamamoto, the Bellinger rumors, no matter what they did after that, particularly how things unfolded with Ohtani, nothing was going to feel good enough. But that being said, the optics surrounding these two moves are even worse because they don't help you all that much offensively. Right? So, you know, you've made your first two moves of the offseason, and you've yet to address your biggest concern, which is middle-of-the-order pop. That's not to say that they won't address that. It's just, yeah, you know, we're sitting here on December 29th, and it's like, yeah, okay, we're heading into the new year, and the Jays have essentially done nothing up to this point. And you know what, like, that's, again, like, that's a very reasonable response. However, just because, and this is probably isn't going to sound all that appealing to Blue Jays fans, but I'm going to say it anyway, just because this is how I feel. Even though they've yet to address their most pressing concern, that's not to say that the Kiermaier and the IKF signings are bad. They don't make a ton of sense right now, given the current situation that the Blue Jays are in. But we can't, well, I guess you can, but at least I'd advise you against completely judging this Blue Jays roster as it is, because there are more moves to come. There are specifically a trade or two to come down the pipeline, because especially with the IKF move, the Blue Jays now have a surplus of infielders, both at the major league level and in the minors at AAA Buffalo. So, you know, to say that they're not going to continue to complement this roster is just false. But again, you know, like, it's fair to feel anxious and uneasy about where this team is at, because, you know, you're left fantasizing about what could have been with Ohtani or Soto or even Bellinger. And in reality, the Blue Jays probably aren't going to start the season. Well, we know they're not going to start the season with two of those three. And there's a pretty good chance they're not going to start the season with any of those three either, because following these moves with Kiermaier and IKF, it really doesn't look like the Blue Jays are going to sign Bellinger, largely due to fit now, because, you know, like, you already have three outfielders on the roster. Technically four, including IKF. And sure, like, you could sign Bellinger and largely rotate George Springer through the DH spot, or make him your, I hate saying everyday DH, because that's just not really a thing anymore, but you could primarily use him in that spot, and have an outfield trio largely of Varsho, Kiermaier, and Bellinger. But, like, does that really make sense for the Blue Jays at this point? You know, are you really going to commit, like, $150 to $200 million, if not more, to a guy like that and not have, you know, an ideal roster balance? You know, especially, too, when you think about it, like, lineup balance is less important when you have talent to overcome that, but if you were to add Bellinger, you would have three left-handed outfielders. And, you know, sure, you can use Bellinger against left-handed pitching. That's, you know, his numbers speak for themselves. He was outstanding versus lefties a season ago. You know, but it's not the ideal mix. And again, talent trumps everything. But I think the Blue Jays are better off. If they're going to bring in another outfielder at this point, might make more sense to add a right-handed outfielder rather than another lefty. And, you know, getting back to Bellinger too, like, I don't love the idea of giving him upwards of $200 million. Like, that scares me a lot, because there are a number of red flags surrounding Bellinger, namely his injury history, and the sustainability of the performance that he showed last season. And I've detailed that in length in previous episodes. We've been through this before. But, you know, as much as Bellinger on one side could help this team and elevate its ceiling even further, I don't think at this point that's the right move. And I think as well, part of the reason why the Blue Jays pounced on a guy like Kiermaier is because they saw the writing on the wall, right? Like, it's important to remember that Cody Bellinger is represented by Scott Boras. And according to multiple reports, they're content with holding out for the right offer, which is likely, at bare minimum, $200 million. And if their camp is willing to wait into mid to late January, if not longer, like Boras has done with some of his other clients, namely Bryce Harper, the Blue Jays could be at risk of missing out on other free agents and other trade targets too. So, you know, as much as they were interested in a guy like Cody Bellinger, and still are to some degree, I don't think he's worth waiting for. When, especially too, even if you wait, you may still miss out on him, because who knows if, you know, a team like, say, the Cubs get desperate and they budge and they give Bellinger what he wants, then not only have you missed out on other potential options, you didn't even get Bellinger in the end. Right? Like, you'd be putting essentially most of your eggs in one basket and then without any sort of guarantee of landing him. Right? Like, the Blue Jays could afford to do that with Ohtani because the rest of the market really wasn't moving. That isn't the case with Bellinger, right? Like, case in point, Kiermaier and IKF are now off the board, right? Like, the market is beginning to slowly move, and the anticipation is that it will continue to pick up speed once we get into the new year. And again, if you're waiting till mid to late January for an answer on Bellinger, who knows what the free agent market for position players, which is already thin to begin with, may look like at that point. And, you know, like, it's not like you could completely fill out the rest of your roster while you're waiting for Bellinger, because he'd be such a big part of it. Like, you would have so many other chain reactions from that signing, right? Where if you get Bellinger, okay, like, maybe you have to rethink a little as to how you utilize the DH spot. Because again, like, a lot of the times, if you were to get Bellinger, you'd likely want to rotate Springer through that DH spot. And if you had already signed an everyday DH, that'd be harder to do. So, you know, again, at the end of the day, I know people are upset over the Kiermaier and the IKF especially moves, but you know, as hard as it is, we just have to give it a little bit more patience, right? Like, if by the start of spring training this roster is still incomplete, it doesn't feature sufficient offensive weapons, you know, then sure, we can absolutely grab our pitchforks and head after the Blue Jays front office. But like, the beauty for them is it's only December 29th, right? We're still 50 plus days from spring training. That doesn't mean that the Blue Jays don't have their work cut out for them, because they do. They, again, like, they've made two signings and neither of them have addressed their biggest concern so far. But, like, as difficult as it may be to see this, these two moves do make a lot of sense. Well, maybe not a lot, but they do make a considerable amount of sense for the Blue Jays, right? Like, Kiermaier especially, just for the contract side, it's definitely a good deal for the Blue Jays, right? Like, Kiermaier had an unbelievable season last year where, you know, he played 129 games in one season after undergoing season-ending hip surgery, right? Those 129 games were tied for the second most of his career in a single season, right? So his availability was fantastic. Right, he gave you elite-level defense. He won his fourth career Gold Glove in center field. Like, blew everyone away with the defensive plays that he made in center field. Gave you even more than what you could have asked for offensively. Slashing .265, .322, .419 with a 104 WRC+, 8 home runs out of the number 9 spot. He was worth 2.2. Fangraphs wins above replacement. I think Baseball Reference had him at nearly 4. And the fact that he comes back after that type of performance and signs a 1-year, $10.5 million contract with reported player incentives along with that. That seems so low for a guy that was that valuable. And sure, like, Kiermaier will be 34 years old next season. Like, if this isn't a guy who's going to sign, like, a 4 or 5 year deal. But given the year he had, how well he looked coming off such a serious injury and procedure, I didn't expect Kiermaier to sign a 1 year deal, especially at $10.5 million, right? Like, I don't normally hold much water to Fangraph's value metric, but they had his 2.2 wins above replacement at $17.4 million, right? Like, immense value for a guy who signed a $9 million contract last winter. And for him to come back and basically sign the same type of deal with, you know, a slight bump, you know, that's something the Blue Jays really couldn't pass up on. Now, like, it's also fair to say that it'll be difficult for Kiermaier to replicate that production, especially given his age, injury history. But, you know, even if he takes a slight step back, and his role is slightly reduced, especially if you bring in another outfielder, like a right-handed hitter, you know, like, he could still be very valuable to the Blue Jays. Again, like, he's still capable of being a two-win player, without question. Because, really, like, as much as the conversation was around Kiermaier being an everyday player last winter, like, he didn't play a ton against left-handed pitching, right? Like, in most situations, Kiermaier was on the bench and Varsho slid over to center field and you had Whit Merrifield in left field. And in all likelihood, that'll probably be the case again, except this time, hopefully, the Blue Jays actually add another outfielder to their mix like they should have done last winter, right? Where all of us began the year saying, look, they're one outfielder short of being a complete team. And now they're in the same situation again where they brought back Kiermaier and they still look like they're one outfielder short. So if they can go out and sign a guy like Adam Duvall or Tommy Pham or even Teoscar Hernandez, this group would look even more impressive because you're not sacrificing defense like we thought, you know, could be a possibility if they didn't bring back Kiermaier, for offense. Right now, you could have, say, Adam Duvall, who's a really good defender in his own right, could slot him in left field against left-handed pitching, have him, you know, mix in against righties too, because he's, you know, capable of hitting against both sets of arms. You use him and have either Kiermaier or Varsho on the bench against left-handed pitching, and that gives you a much more potent offense. So I see this as one piece of the puzzle, and it's an important piece that helps this team further because, you know, like, that was kind of, again, the situation, the dilemma that the Blue Jays were sort of facing earlier this winter, where it's like, okay, like, we know this team needs more offense. You're hoping that it's going to come from within with guys regressing to the mean like Guerrero and Springer and Kirk and Varsho, hopefully. But, you know, you also need more offense. And it's like, okay, Kiermaier's a free agent. Matt Chapman's a free agent. Those were arguably two of your better defenders, if not two of the best defenders on your team last year. If you're not going to bring both of them back, where are you going to find yourself on that scale, right? Like, how much defense are you willing to sacrifice for offense, right? We've had this discussion before several times. And now that they've brought back Kiermaier, you know, again, like, it looks like on the surface, it's a run it back type of scenario. But again, like, even if you do that, if you go out and add an offense first outfielder, you're better than you were a season ago, at least on paper, right? Like, again, who knows where Kiermaier's production is going to land, especially offensively, right? Because he had such a good year for the Blue Jays in that department. You know you're going to get elite defense with Kevin Kiermaier, but especially given the fact that he's going to be playing on turf again for 81 of his 162 potential games, is he going to be able to hold up like he did a season ago? Like, that's a difficult thing to predict. Which is why, again, if you go out and get another outfielder, like, say, an Adam Duvall, who would be perfect on this team, if Kiermaier were to suffer an injury and miss time, you'd be just fine with Dalton Varsho in center field and having a guy like Adam Duvall playing regularly. You'd have your bases covered there. If you didn't add another outfielder, then you're left relying on, again, like an Isaiah Kiner Falefa playing regularly in left field, calling up a Nathan Lucas, relying on having to put Kevin Biggio in the outfield again, David Schneider maybe even too. Like that could potentially be something they experiment with again. This team is one outfielder short of being a really strong outfield group. So we'll see where that goes in that department, but Kiermaier, even off the field, is such an important player for this team. What he brings inside that clubhouse, it was evident last season, right? Like, everyone loves Kevin Kiermaier. That is not up for debate. It was just, most didn't expect him to be back, largely because of the type of year he had, where he kind of thought he priced himself out of Toronto. And as it turns out, he probably turned down more money and more term to stay with the Blue Jays, right? Like, Kevin Kiermaier did an interview with Mike Woolner, and I didn't listen to the full part of it. I probably should have. It's my bad on that part. But from what I did hear, things came together pretty quickly for both sides when the Blue Jays called Kiermaier's agent. So, you know, there's definitely, obviously, a ton of mutual interest between both sides. And again, like, the fact that Kiermaier was so on board with taking such a, not a lowball offer, but a team-friendly deal. Like, that was the most surprising part, in my opinion. So if he goes out and has a similar year to the one that he had in 2023, which, again, might be a tad unrealistic, but even if he comes close to it, that $10.5 million, even with incentives, that's gonna look like a pretty nifty piece of work by Ross Atkins and the Blue Jays offense. So I definitely did not hate that move whatsoever, and honestly, I wasn't really all that upset with IKF either. You know, again, where the Blue Jays are, did it make a ton of sense to, you know, outbid other teams for a guy of his caliber? Maybe not, but if you're only looking at it from that angle, I can see how, you know, it would be somewhat confusing. And I don't want this to come off as me talking down to people like they don't know what's going on. Like, that's not true at all. Blue Jays fans are very intelligent, most of them at least. But the way I see the IKF move is he's able to replace both Merrifield and Espinal in one player. That's kind of the way I see this move, largely because of his versatility, right? Like, throughout this offseason, from what I've heard and what I've reported, it's not a matter of if Santiago Espinal is traded, it's more of a when. Because, you know, like, even though he has three more seasons of club control, he's starting to get more expensive than he's worth, right? Like, he's due a projected $2.5 million through arbitration, and he's only going to get more expensive the more he occurs service time. And you look at Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, and the Blue Jays gave him $7.5 million per year over two. And that could go up to a total of $16 million if he reaches his full incentives. But the thing is here, on that base salary, if we're treating Espinal's ARB projection as accurate, or at least close to it, you can essentially minus $2.5 million from IKF's salary. So that puts him at basically, like, you're adding $5 million to the Jays' projected payroll. Because Espinal and IKF, like I said off the top, like, they play the same role essentially. The only difference really is that IKF gives the Blue Jays more versatility, a more reliable defense, right, than Espinal. And you know, it's a bit of a toss-up offensively, but I do think IKF gives the Blue Jays a bit more of an upside over Espinal. And you know, if you were to look at IKF's offensive results from 2023, you'd probably call BS on that, right? Like, you're looking at his slash line, and it's like, okay, 242, 306, 340, 286 WOBA, 82 WRC+. He was worth 0.2 Fangraphs wins above replacement. And, you know, you look at that, you hear what I just said, and you're like, okay, you're an idiot. What are you talking about? And you know what? Okay, it's fair. I'll give you that. However, I'll throw this back at you. IKF, very good discipline hitter. 81st percentile in whiff rate a season ago. 64th in chase percentage. 66th in strikeout percentage, right? He controls the strike zone incredibly well. He doesn't, you know, swing and miss a ton at middle pitches. That's, you know, definitely a big upside. Especially considering for Blue Jays fans who saw a lot of that last year, particularly from a guy like Matt Chapman. But then I'll throw this other angle at you, where the Yankees didn't put IKF in as many positions to succeed as they should have. And here's why. IKF a season ago played 115 games for the Yankees, right? 115 games. It's a lot for a guy who was only worth 0.2 wins above replacement. However, of those 115 games, IKF played 11 in the leadoff spot for the Yankees. Another two in the second spot. He batted third once. He batted cleanup fourth. He batted fifth 20 times. He batted sixth 28 times. He only hit nine times. And he only hit eight 11 times. More often than not, IKF was positioned in either the number 5, number 6, or number 7 spots inside the Yankees lineup. And that's largely because, outside of Aaron Judge, they lacked reliable offensive weapons. It was essentially Aaron Judge and everyone else. And that's kind of been the situation with the Yankees of the last few years. And that's why they went out and paid a lot of pitching for a guy like Juan Soto, or for one season of Juan Soto. Now, because the Blue Jays roster is deeper than the Yankees, they'll be afforded the ability to consistently position him in the bottom third of their lineup, where he's better suited. And not only that, but the Blue Jays, because they have so many infielders at their disposal, and hopefully will add another option at third base, they could put IKF in positions to succeed against specific pitch types. Because last season, IKF excelled the most against four-seamers, which he produced a +3 run value against, and curveballs, producing a +5 run value against. He also hit produced a 308 average against curveballs, a 307 WOBA, which is, you know, not great, but not terrible either. And against four-seamers, 282 average, 344 WOBA, 13.1% whiff rate, a 20.3% strikeout rate, 50% hard hit rate, a 309 expected average, a 464 expected slug, and a 375 expected WOBA. So again, like, in this day and age, typically a lot of pitchers throw more off-speed and breaking ball pitches, or breaking balls. Kind of redundant to say breaking ball pitches. They throw fewer fastballs and more junk at you, right? So positioning IKF against pitchers who throw a lot of four-seamers might be a little difficult, but guys who throw a lot of curveballs might not be as challenging. So, you know, if the Blue Jays are facing either a righty or a lefty whose arsenal features a lot of four-seamers and curveballs, gotta expect IKF will be in the lineup because his bat path tailors a lot better to pitches like that rather than when he goes up against sliders or sinkers or cutters or even changeups. So, you know, those are two ways right there where the Blue Jays can help IKF be a more productive offensive player than he was a season ago. And, like, he also won't face as much pressure as he did in New York. Because, again, like, he's looking up at him, looking up higher in the lineup, and he sees George Springer, Bo Bichette, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Alejandro Kirk, Danny Jansen, whoever else the Blue Jays add to their lineup between now and next season, right? Like, IKF will just be in the bottom half of the lineup with, you know, the Kevin Kiermaiers, the Kevin Biggios, the Dalton Varshows, likely, you know, the Davis Schneiders, right? Like, he's going to be in the bottom third of the lineup just looking to, again, get on base, not strike out, make contact, those types of things, right? Like, and as well, like, again, sure, the $7.5 million, it's a little high for a guy of IKF's caliber, especially considering the type of year that he had. But if you look historically, right, 2022, he was worth a win and a half. 2021, he was worth just over a win and a half, right? So at those figures, 7.5 is pretty reasonable. So, you know, like, again, this is easier said than done. But, like, overreacting at the type of year that he had in 2023 and saying, okay, that's who he is, it's just not necessarily true. Did the Blue Jays need to sign IKF? No. But if they always envisioned trading from their infielder group, both at the big leagues and in the minors, where you have a major surplus, right, headlined by Aurelvis Martinez and Addison Barger, Leo Jimenez, Damiano Palgiamani, you know, Spencer Horwitz, even you could throw into that group as well. Otto Lopez is out of options. Ernie Clement's out of options too, even though you probably waive or DFA Clement because, you know, doesn't have much trade value at all. But ideally, you'd like to package together, you know, like a Espinal and Lopez with, you know, a Barger or a Jimenez or Paul Giamatti and take those guys and go get another bat to help complement the Blue Jays' current mix. Because not only would that make them better offensively, that also cleans up the 40-man roster a little bit, which following the Kiermaier and IKF signings, the Blue Jays only have one spot open on their 40-man roster. And they still got more moves to come. So, you know, you got to do a better job of cleaning that up. And what better way to do that would be by killing two birds with one stone and getting some offensive support while also cleaning up your 40-man roster. You know, again, like, could be similar, probably not, you know, in the same context, but, like, a few years ago when the Blue Jays packaged together, I believe it was three players, to go get Steven Matz from the New York Mets. Obviously, the Blue Jays wouldn't do that to get a pitcher this time, but still, like, that's the type of model they could try and replicate to try and go get a little bit more offensive support while also continuing to press in free agency. And another note on IKF, too, is that it's so different playing for the Yankees and being in that market where there's just constant pressure on you to perform. And when you don't, especially over an extended period, the fan base turns on you. The market turns on you. And, you know, for some guys, like, you just absolutely explode when you leave there, right? Case in point, Aaron Hicks. Even Joey Gallo to some extent, right? Like, remember the type of run he had with the Dodgers after he left the Yankees. you know, like, it's just, it's different in that market. So, you know, like, who knows if possibly that happens for IKF with the Blue Jays, right? Like, all the factors I mentioned, you know, you put him in better spots to succeed. There's less pressure on him to perform offensively. He's got more support around him. It's a new, it's a new scenery, new surroundings. Like, you never know. And again, like, if he's back to the, if he gets back to the 1.5 wins above replacement, I'll take that at $7.5 million, especially when, like, realistically, that's only a $5 million bump from what you were looking at investing in your payroll in 2024. So, you know, on its own, yeah, it's a curious move. But when you look at it from a bird's eye view, when you take into account the bigger picture, IKF could end up just being a replacement for Merrifield and Espinal, and giving you equal, if not more, value in one spot rather than having two of those guys on the roster. And by doing so, you can take that extra roster spot and spend it on an outfielder or a DH, right? Like, when you're looking at it in a bottle, it doesn't make a ton of sense. But when you expand that bottle and look outside of it, you can start to put the pieces together as to why the Blue Jays would make this sort of move. Now, the tricky part here coming next is which players the Blue Jays add. Because now it's, they have the run prevention, right? They have more than enough run prevention, particularly in the outfield and probably in the infield too, right? Like, IKF won a gold glove at third base in 2020 with the Texas Rangers, right? Like, you have that run prevention there at third base, even if you don't bring back Matt Chapman. What you need now is bona fide offensive weapons, right? Like, if they give you defense, that's great. That's even better. But it's essential to go out and get offense now. And particularly slugging. Middle of the order pop that you can insert behind or ahead of Vladdy, and give him more protection and add some more fear into that top half of the lineup. And there are still a number of options available in free agency, right? Especially in the outfield. You still have Teoscar Hernandez available. You got JD Martinez available. Jorge Soler, Reese Hoskins. Even, you know, Jock Peterson. If the Blue Jays wanted to take another crack at him again, like they've done previously. Even a Joey Votto, right? Like, he'd be on the lower end of that scale, but, you know, there are plenty of options available from a DH standpoint. Gets a little thin when you're looking at outfielders, right? Teo, Adam Duvall, Tommy Pham, maybe a Robbie Grossman on a cheaper end of the market type of deal. Christian Yelich probably doesn't make as much sense for the Blue Jays anymore, similar to the Cody Bellinger conversation, where it's like, okay, like, do you really want to add, you know, obstacles to your lineup construction by adding such a high price contract to your payroll? Like, it just, there's not as much benefit to doing that type of move anymore as there was before going out and bringing back Kevin Kiermaier. Same kind of thing with Mike Trout. You know, unless the Blue Jays do something unforeseen and trade George Springer, which I don't anticipate, especially because, like, you look back and that contract, fairly, you know, reasonable at this point. So I wouldn't recommend going down that route. But there are still options here for the outfield that the Blue Jays can explore. Where it gets difficult is third base. Because I still think the Blue Jays need to add some sort of offense to that position. You know, because I think in the end, the Blue Jays, if they don't end up bringing back Matt Chapman, which is still a possibility, but if they don't, we'll likely see the Blue Jays rotate multiple guys through that position, probably similar to how they'll handle second base next season, which, given the amount of versatility on their roster, not the worst case in the world to have that outcome. But I'd like to add another name to the mix at third base, because, like, really, you're looking at Biggio, IKF, Schneider on some days. And, you know, it would just be nice to have another potential option there. Obviously, Addison Barger could become part of that conversation. Likely not at the start of the year, but, you know, if injuries happen, he could be a name that gets called up if they have a hole at third base, or, you know, in right field, too. Less likely that happens, but... or if, you know, he doesn't get traded this winter as part of a bigger package. But when you're looking in free agency, obviously, Candelario's off the market, is in Cincinnati. There's not a ton of options out there right now. Like, I don't really want Justin Turner playing third base. You know, he could be an option, a DH option, but... he wasn't all that good defensively in the prime of his career. So to have him be an option for the Blue Jays at third base, that would scare me a little. So probably would want to steer clear of that, you know, potential route. But I think ultimately, if the Blue Jays are going to add another bat at third base, it's probably going to have to come via trade, and that's where you might get into the idea of packaging together a bunch of infielders to go get a third baseman. The first that comes to mind is Willy Adames in Milwaukee. Been a shortstop for the majority of his career, but he's really good defensively, and he could move to second, he could move to third, theoretically, and be another potential option at short if something, you know, knock on wood, were to happen to Bo Bichette. And he'd add some considerable pop to the Blue Jays lineup. Somebody you could absolutely position within the middle of their order, within the Blue Jays order. The only thing is, the Brewers aren't going to give him away for free, right? Like, Willy Adames was worth almost 3.5 Fangraphs wins above replacement last season. And among third basemen who earned at least 150 plate appearances, he ranked 8th in isolated power at 190. So even though he only has 1 year left of team control, and he's unlikely to sign with the team long term, it would take a considerable haul to convince the Brewers to part with him. And if you're the Blue Jays, sure, you absolutely would want to explore extending him. But how willing are you going to be to take the chance that he walks after next season, and you just gave up a package of, like, Paul Giamatti, Espinal, Barger, right? Like, that's a significant package. Like, that is, especially Paul Giamatti and Barger, to give those two pieces up for, like, 1 year maybe of Adames, like, is that worth it? Maybe, but is Atkins in the front office going to be comfortable making that type of move? That's ultimately the bigger question here. And again, the difficult thing is, beyond Adames, there's no real clear cut trade options for you to pivot to. Like, you could look at Luis Renjifo with the Angels. He's got 2 more years of club control left. But not a great option. You know, he was okay, but he was almost worth 2 wins above replacement last season, 16 home runs, 51 RBIs, 264, 339, 444 clip, 180 ISO, 114 WRC plus. Isn't great defensively, but you can be okay with that. He has some versatility to him. He can play third base, shortstop, second base. Doesn't strike out a ton, walks a fair bit, but doesn't create all that much contact. So that would be a more under the radar type of move, like not a headline worthy trade, but could be inexpensive. And for a guy with 2 years of club control, like maybe you could potentially use him as a stopgap option until, again, maybe Barger is more big league ready, and maybe you could get Renhefo without having to include Barger, or at least both of Barger and Paul Giamatti, right? Like, Paul Giamatti's defense isn't great at third base, but maybe in 2 years' time it's more developed and at least, you know, average at third base. So that could be a potential option that the Blue Jays explore. But it gets thin, right? Like Ryan McMahon maybe in Colorado, but his numbers aren't great on the road, and he strikes out a fair bit. He'd give you a lot of defensive upside for sure, but you know, overall he was 12% below league average according to WRC plus. And even with that defense, all of his offensive struggles, he was only worth 1.2 wins above replacement last season. Like, it's not a great option there. Maybe pick up the phone and call the Cleveland Guardians and ask about Jose Ramirez, but I don't know, man. I don't know about him. He just seems like he bleeds. What colors are they? Like red and blue? Gray? Like, he just loves being in Cleveland. He loves playing for the Cleveland Guardians. And because he has a no trade clause, I don't know. I think that's a tough sell. I do think it's a tough sell on trying to go after Jose Ramirez. Because, like, obviously he'd be a great fit for the Blue Jays. And he would help address the Guardians' current financial situation, where because of the uncertainty regarding their regional TV deal, they're looking to shed money. And what better way to do that than trading their highest paid player? So, obviously, I would love that. You know, it would bring back 2021 vibes when the Blue Jays were heavily interested in Jose Ramirez before he signed that long-term deal, that very team-friendly long-term deal of his. You know, that ultimately may end up being just a pipe dream, but it's definitely worth exploring if you're the Blue Jays. But I don't know. I don't see him wanting to move out of Cleveland. You know, perhaps the Blue Jays also look at somebody like Brandon Drury, who, you know, I guess you can sort of consider an old friend. But he's certainly a much better hitter now than he was those years he played in Toronto. You know, like last season he hit 26 home runs, drove in 83, posted a 497 slug and a 235 ISO with a 114 WRC plus. You know, hits the ball considerably hard, 46.3% hard hit rate, 11% barrel rate, and very versatile, as we all know, right? Can play first, second, third, shortstop if you need, left field, right field. Defensively, though, it's, you know, again, like it's not all that favorable. He played He didn't play third base at all in 2023, but in 2022, over 513 innings, he registered a negative 4 DRS and an even 0 outs above average. Like, his defense is far better suited at second base and even first. But again, because the Blue Jays already have their run prevention in the infield, they could bite the bullet with a guy like Brandon Drury, who, you know, he's in the final year of his 2-year contract, $8.5 million. That wouldn't be all that, you know, extensive impactful to the Blue Jays payroll. And I don't think it would cost all that much to acquire him too. I think it would just come down to how willing the Angels would be to trade him, because like all indications are that the Angels want to put together a competitive-ish roster next season. And I think that's probably just to appease Mike Trout, who has a no trade clause. And if he wants out, then, you know, like, it's full teardown for the Angels. Like, there's no coming back from losing Ohtani for nothing but a compensation draft pick, and having Mike Trout wanting out. You know, like, you, at that point, you are trading every valuable player that isn't a pre-arbitration candidate, right? So I think they would at least be open to the conversation of trading Brandon Drury. But again, if you're the Blue Jays, I think you explore most, if not all, of your other options first. And then if, you know, you come up short in those areas, then potentially come back around to a guy like Brandon Drury and see where you can get with him. Because he's not somebody I would want in the middle of the order, but with his power, I'd absolutely slot him in that, you know, number 6, number 7 spot for the Blue Jays, and have him, you know, even bounce around the infield a fair bit as well, where, like, you know, you could have Biggio or IKF or even Schneider start at third base, and you put Brandon Drury at second base, and have him be a little bit more favorable with his defense on the right side rather than the left side. So that would give the Blue Jays another versatility option, who also would move the needle for them offensively, which is something they desperately, desperately need. So we'll see where things head, but, you know, at the very least, it's good to see the Blue Jays show that they do have money to spend, right? Like, they gave IKF a 2-year deal that could be worth up to $16 million, right? You don't do that if you don't have more money to spend. And we kind of already knew that just by judging the fact that the Blue Jays exercised Chad Green's 2-year option, right? If they didn't do that, then it would kind of indicate that they're kind of pinching their pennies a little bit. But that doesn't appear to be the case. And obviously, like, they're not going to reinvest that $700 million that they potentially had set aside for Ohtani into just, like, other pieces. But they definitely have the backing from ownership, Rogers Communications, to go out and make this team better. And even though it's been slow going up to this point, I think in the end we'll think that this team is better positioned than it was at the end of last season. And that's ultimately the goal. Probably not going to be a finished product what team is coming out of the offseason, but as long as the Blue Jays, in my mind, add 3 more players that will realistically move the needle for you, they should be in a pretty respectable spot moving forward. And then they can focus on, you know, adding a, you know, whether it's a hybrid type of pitcher who can start or relieve for you, and maybe look at adding a back end of the bullpen type of arm too, and potentially even solidifying their starting pitching depth beyond the major league roster too. But those are on the back burner, right? For right now, all the focus should be on adding some more offense to this lineup. Once that is addressed, then they can move on to filling out the rest of this roster and looking ahead to spring training and hopefully allowing this team to get off on the right start, hit the ground running, and see where the cards fall. So for right now, again, it doesn't look great on its own, but knowing this offense or front office, knowing that this roster is incomplete and there are more moves to come, I think we got to give it a little bit more time. And again, that's easier said than done. But I do anticipate that there are more moves to come. So we'll just have to wait and see what they are. But that does it for this week's episode. I hope all of you will join me next time for another edition of Blue Jays World Update. But until that time, I'm your host, Thomas Hall. Thanks for listening, and Happy New Year to you and all.